Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's healthcare needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
There has been a great debate in some places and schools about how and what history is taught and remembered, especially Black history. At the same time, genealogy and learning about family histories have increased in popularity. Sometimes that research, often with the help of DNA, turns up surprises or confirms stories or rumors of the past. A great example is confirmation that Thomas Jefferson fathered several children with the enslaved Sally Hemings. These type stories are becoming commonplace. Two guests on our program know that firsthand. A white woman, Phoebe Kilby, contacted Betty Kilby Baldwin, a Black woman, saying she suspected they are connected through slavery. That started a conversation and led to a book called Cousins. Phoebe Kilby and Betty Kilby Baldwin will be telling their story at Carlisle United Methodist Church tomorrow night at 7, sponsored by the social change organization Moving Circles. But they are both with us on The Spark today. I want to welcome both of you to the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Scott.
Well, let's start with your backgrounds. So, Betty, let me start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am actually Dr. Betty Kilby Fisher Baldwin. I received my doctor's in humane letters from Shenandoah when I spoke at the college. I was an infant plaintiff in the desegregation of the schools. And we sued the school board through the Brown decision, which is now 70 years old this year. I sued the school board to gain entrance into the only high school in the county. We brought about the first desegregation in Virginia.
Now, what county was that? What school district?
It was Warren County, Virginia.
Warren County, Virginia. Front Royal is the biggest town. Maybe the only town in Warren County. And I was telling you, my first full-time radio job was in Front Royal back in the late 70s. So, Dr. Baldwin, how I'll refer to you for throughout the program.
That's okay. I'm still just Betty.
So, Phoebe Kilby, tell us about your background.
Well, I was born and grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. And I knew nothing of Betty or my family's slaveholding history, just knew nothing of this. And certainly I had no problems going to school, nothing like what Betty had to go through. But I didn't know about that either. But later in life, I started to look into my family's history, and I did find out that my family had enslaved people, and I was able to figure out that Betty was a descendant of one of those persons my family enslaved.
Now, we had talked before the program. You did this before Ancestry.com was real popular and before they were offering DNA. So you actually did it the old-fashioned way. When I say did it, research your family history the old-fashioned way. How did you do that?
Well, I had no experience whatsoever in genealogical research. And Ancestry, as you said, just didn't have as much information at the time I was doing this research, which was in 2006. So I knew that my family had farms in Rappahannock and Culpeper County, Virginia. So I knew where the Rappahannock Historical Society was. So I just went to visit them. And they helped me. They helped me look at the U.S. Census, to go to the courthouse next door and look for records there. So it was all the really basic research, hands-on, where you're holding documents. And frankly, I think that's a wonderful way to do genealogy. It's very right there, and there's something about holding a document from 1865 or 1830 in your hands with the ink right there that makes it more real.
Yeah, I agree with you. Did you have to wear gloves to they protect those documents?
Believe it or not, back then they did not make me wear gloves.
I wondered about that.
I should have thought of that, but they didn't. Now they do.
Yeah.
And they often don't allow you to hold them. But back then, they did.
So how did you discover that there were ancestors in your family who had enslaved people?
Well, I had a family member who'd done a lot of genealogical work already on my father's side. This is the Kilby family. And I had that in hand. And I just looked up my great-great-grandfather because I knew he lived in the early 1800s. And I thought, well, this is, I can look him up in the census, U.S. Census. And I picked out 1840 because I thought that would be right in the middle. And in the 1840 census, it had a slave schedule associated that they listed all the white family by the head of household. And then you could go to another page and it showed the slaves that were owned by that person. And there were no names on those, but it did give numbers. And so in 1840, this great-great-grandfather owned two slaves. And that's how I figured it out, that they enslaved people. Now, the next thing was, who are these people? What happened to them? And that takes a lot more digging because the census, the U.S. Census, usually does not give slave names. There are some places where they did, but in this part of Virginia, and in most places, they don't. They just list the slaves by gender and by age category.
So how did you discover that Betty was a relative?
Well, what inspired all this was, and to get me started on this, was this group called Coming to the Table. And it's a national organization. First meetings were held in 2006. And it's inspired by Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, where it says, I have a dream that the sons of former slaves and former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. And so these people are coming to the table. And as a matter of fact, some of those first people who got together to come up with this idea were descendants of Thomas Jefferson and Martha Jefferson and Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. So they were coming to the table. And this group inspired me to not just figure out whether my family had enslaved people, but also to try to figure out who was living today that might be descended from those enslaved persons. And what got me started, the big clue, was I just Googled my name, Kilby, which I'd never done in 2006, and up came a website, and it was Betty's, and she'd written a book. And I could see from the cover she was African-American, so I should look at this book. Well, I read it, and I could tell from the book that her father and my father had grown up on farms less than a mile apart. So there was awful lot of circumstantial evidence. But really to figure out whether she was actually descendant from persons my family and, well, the name too, Betty
right.
Kilby
Baldwin.
Yeah. She's Betty Kilby Fisher at the time. To figure out that real connection just required a lot of research in courthouses. And the big clue for me was I had a ancestor who sued his mother for ownership of the slaves in 1865, and it named the slaves in that suit. And then I could find them later in the 1870 census, and then in later censees, I could find Betty.
So when did you decide, and what was it like reaching out to Betty?
Well, I started this research in 2006, and at that time I didn't know that I didn't have the proof. So I went to some Coming to the Table people, and they said, well, Phoebe, the only way you're going to find out is to contact Betty, and next week's Martin Luther King Day, and that would be a good day to do it. And I was thinking, I just figured out my family enslaved people, and you're telling me I should contact her? And they said, well, yeah. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, it would be symbolic. So that's what I did. I sent her an email on Martin Luther King Day, 2007, and she responded with an email saying, "Hello, cousin." Mm. That's how we got started.
So, Betty, what was your reaction when you received that email from Phoebe?
I had written my book, Whitwell and Walls, and I was out promoting my book. And when I read her email, I had always known that we were descended of slaves. I have aunts that were the product of the old slave master. And I dealt with it when I wrote my book. So I was pretty comfortable in knowing that she was out there somewhere. But at the same time, having written my book, I was looking for the next mountain to climb. And this seemed to be the appropriate mountain. And so when I wrote back, "Hello, cousin," I was merely stating what I already knew, that, yeah, we probably can.
So you both have admiration for Dr. King.
Oh, yes, yes. During the desegregation movement, we had one school that was closed for 5 years, and Dr. Martin Luther King came up, and I had an opportunity to meet him, but he was not really important then. He was just Reverend King, just one of the many preachers that the family knew. And when I went to the March on Washington, he had become famous by then. And so I did projects in school on Dr. King, wrote about him. And so, yeah, he was one of my heroes. And the opportunity to sit down and do something, I'd never heard of anybody else sitting down with the slave-owning family like he had perceived in his dream, that the sons and daughters of former slaves and former slave owners at the table of brotherhood. So I thought that that was a great privilege. So I was kind of glad that she had, that Phoebe had reached out to me, and now we could live this dream. I had no idea that we would still be living this dream and talking about it and inspiring other people. The one thing that he had, that Dr. King had talked about, was the beloved community. And nobody talked about the beloved community. But that was exactly what we were doing. We were living not only his dream, but the beloved community. And so if we can all, as people, throw down the rocks and just kind of embrace one another, we can make this world a better place. And so that was the part of Dr. King's message that I was getting ready to live, and I was evolving into living.
Mm. Beautiful story. So, Betty, let's talk a little bit about how your conversations with Phoebe progressed. I mean, you get this email on Martin Luther King Day. When did you decide, okay, we're going to continue this conversation?
Well, I had my book had just come out. The documentary had just been planned. And so I had been very busy. I missed Christmas with the family. And so without even realizing, I said to Phoebe, okay, let's get together at the premiere of the documentary. So we decided to have
dinner. Now, this documentary is about the desegregation, right?
Right. It was titled just like the book, Whitwell and Walls, the Betty Kilby Fisher story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I invited them to the dinner. But what I forgot to do is I forgot to tell my family that the descendants of the family that once owned ours was coming to dinner. So I called them all one by one rather than to just let them fall into this. And one by one, I talked to them. The ones that wanted to come came. And so my two daughters, they were supposed to run interception with the family just in case if somebody came and was going to, you know, be ugly. And so they were there, and they had been raised in a very neutral environment, had as many white friends and They were even kind of new to my story because I didn't tell them, you know, about desegregating the schools. And so Phoebe and her sister showed up at the restaurant. Everybody had been seated. And so Phoebe had to sit next to my brother. And so we began the conversation. Well, the first thing, well, how long are you going to stick around? What are you here for? You know, people come, but they don't stick around. They just come and leave. And then one of them asked, well, where's my 40 acres and a mule? You know, they just couldn't resist that.
Couldn't hold back.
Couldn't hold back.
You know, this does bring new meaning to Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, the movie that Cindy Portier was
in. It did indeed.
All right. So, you know, I have to ask this question. Phoebe, when you found out that you had an ancestor, more than one ancestor, who had enslaved people, what did you think about that? How did you feel?
Well, growing up in a family where this wasn't talked about, it was kind of a shock. I mean, really, it was shocking to see this and see it written and recorded. And then I would have to say it's hard to find a word that covers this. It's not really shame. But certainly there's some regret that my family participated in this. But I also realized, and I did research in this, that it wasn't just slavery. It was up and everything since then. Because I do know that in the county where my father grew up, Rappahannock County, which is over the mountain from Warren
right.
County,
mm-hmm.
that Rappahannock County continued to keep desegregated schools, and my uncle was on the school board and oversaw all that. And then through to my father, who was a doctor in Baltimore, and I remember he had separate waiting rooms. He had a colored waiting room and a white waiting room.
In Baltimore
in the 50s
mm-hmm.
and early 60s. So I remember that. But it's not just that. It's me, too. I mean, I grew up in a racist household, and I absorbed all that. And I think even today, I can't necessarily get rid of it all. So I felt like there was some regret for my family participating in all in this, and then realizing some recognition that I, too, am a part of the system, that I have absorbed racism, and that I need to do something to expunge this from myself as best I can.
Betty, what did you think? I mean, you said that you knew that you had an ancestor, at least one, who was white. But, you know, I have to say that I'm kind of taken aback when I hear you say, we knew there was a white slave owner who owned our family. You know, it just kind of, today you're not used to hearing something like that.
I was taking Virginia history. I'm sitting in the classroom. And I had saved it until my senior year, not wanting to hear because all we were going to talk about was slavery. And then the professor, Dr. Hostra, started talking about the free Negro community. And when he started talking about the free Negro community, I'd never heard it. I'm in my 30s in college and never heard it, this piece about my history. So he made us write about it. Then he came and he said, next semester, we're going to talk about this little girl in Front Royal that desegregated the schools. And when he said that, that was me. That was me. And I told him I couldn't do it. But I had already worked through the issues of having descended from slavery. I had already completed my education. I had won. I had overcome it all. And once you overcome it, then you're able to sit down and deal with it. And that's exactly what Phoebe and I did. We sit down and we dealt with it. We talked about it. We cried about it.
What did you cry about?
I cried when she brought the piece of paper that the person that had really upset my whole persona was old man Dick Finks. This was the person who had literally enslaved my father after slavery was over. And when I saw that, he even signed, and slavery was all over. He signed for my grandparents to get married, and he already had a child by my grandmother.
What year was that?
That was, I can't remember exactly.
But it was well after.
My dad was born in 1917. Yeah, so yeah. It was like into the 1940s.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I have to say, this has been, I'm retiring in a month, and 32 years of doing this. This is one of my favorite programs. I just enjoy your story so much, and it is so inspiring to hear both of you speak about it. And if you would like to hear more, because, you know, 22 minutes just isn't enough time. If you'd like to hear more, tomorrow, Phoebe Kilby and Betty Kilby Baldwin will be speaking at Carlisle United Methodist Church starting at 7 o'clock. Thank you very much. It was an honor to hear from both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. We hope you'll hear the whole story tomorrow night.